All right. Well, this morning we begin the season of Advent. And I always like the first Sunday of Advent because you have this exciting juxtaposition of two things that I think that our society sometimes isn't great at. So Advent is the season of waiting, and sometimes we're not so good at that. And then it usually lands on the first, this first Sunday lands on Thanksgiving weekend and giving thanks. And so it's these two things colliding. And so this morning, I thought it would be appropriate for us just to spend some time together giving thanks. So why don't we do this? Just to get started, just turn to a few people around you and just share maybe two or three things that you're thankful for in life. All right? Go ahead and do that. All right. Well, I was thinking through some things that I might be thankful for, and there's a lot. And I've kind of come to this place this year where I'm trying to figure something out. Honestly, the last few years, I've kind of had a pretty tough time with this holiday. Not because I don't have a lot of things to be thankful for. I do. But I just had a tough time with the origin of this holiday, and that in the midst of our thankfulness, you have a people that had a lot taken from them. And so I would say the last three or four Thanksgivings, I probably wasn't the most fun person to have Thanksgiving with. And I've kind of come into this new season of trying to figure this out, and I'm very early on in this. And I thought, well, instead of just, you know, railing against it or making little jokes like, Happy Genocide Day, right? What if we spent some time annually? And I think it's very appropriate to give thanks and to be expressive of those things. But what if we took some time annually as well to remember the Native American community where there's so much beauty and culture and art, and really to give thanks for them? And then to honor them. I stumbled onto this artist. His name is Edward Curtis. And he has a huge collection of photography in the Library of Congress. And I encourage you to look it up. And it just shows their way of life, their art, their culture. Part of it, too, you see kind of his perspective when there's inscriptions on these photographs where it's from a very Eurocentric perspective. But just to reflect, give thanks for, and at least to honor, right? And so I think it's great that we as a community can pause and to remember and to give thanks. And so this morning, we're going to do that together. I'm excited for the sermon. The sermon will be three stories from our community. And so why don't we do this? To get us started, the text is taken from Luke chapter 17. Go ahead and read it with a friend. It's Luke 17, 11 through 19. Read it aloud, and then we'll hear these stories from our community. All right, go ahead and read. All right, so Luke chapter 17. And so this morning, we're going to hear some stories from our community and their stories of thanks and how their story intersects with the story in Luke 17. So first off, we've got Skylar Bonilla, and he's going to come on up, so let's welcome him up here. Skylar. All right, so this is our good friend Skylar. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what do you do?
Well, I'm from Austin. You know, people that know me here, they know that I'm from this neighborhood, you know, born and raised, and got a lot of history here in Austin. And, and I go to school, I'm a student at ACC, trying my hardest to get into University of Texas. So that's what my goals are now. Work at a little restaurant in town.
Okay, at the Stallion Grill.
Stallion Grill, it's best not bad. Soul food in town.
It's not bad, it's pretty good. So you're from this neighborhood, and you're studying at ACC. What are you studying?
Oh, I'm studying for business Okay. Business administration degree, yeah.
And what you have to give thanks for is kind of related to school, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, this is my good, real good, been real good year. I started in January this year back in college. You know, I had a bad college stint in the beginning, you know, and high school and all that, you know, was bad, you know, because I wasn't interested in schools, interested in other things, you know, but, you know, I've been having real good, making good grades.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this possibly, it's not, the semester's not done, mm-hmm. but this might be your best semester that you've had.
Yeah, if I get this math together, I get straight A's, you know.
But this semester and kind of school, this story actually goes back to when you were younger. When you were 13 or 14, you met a group of friends, right?
Yeah, tell us about that. You know, I was always real good in school, you know, and that's one thing I was, you know, I was on a path to success, but, you know, college, everything was in my future from a very young age. I was prepped by my mother and my father, you know, to go be in school, but of course, you know, I didn't want to do that all the time, even though I was good at it. I figured, oh, I could just do that and live double life, you know, with my homies, you know. And so I started getting with the homies and, you know, everybody from our neighborhood, you know, we all ran with the same gang, you know. It's the Bloods gang, you know, here in Eastside. Everybody, you know, if you ever notice, you know, if you ever see what you might think is a thug on the side of the street, you know, more than likely got red on if you're in the East Side, you know. That's very common around here. And so I got into that, you know, too, and started messing around. End up not going to school and, you know, getting a lot into drugs and got it, you know, just messing up. Disappointed a lot of people.
And it started when you were 13 or 14. Yeah, 13, what was kind of the reason behind wanting to be a part of the gang?
Oh, just, you know, everybody was, that's what you did, you know, mm-hmm. and if you wanted to be somebody, you know, I was kind of, you know, I was kind of like schoolboy and stuff, and no, you know, I didn't have a lot of, you know, nobody, you know, say, hey, what's up, Skyler, you know, what's up with you, you know, you're doing all right, we got your back and all that. I didn't have all that, you know, but I wanted that because most of the other people around me had that, you know. So we all formed a bond together, and we formed what was the second chapter of a gang that had been, the older guys were the first chapter, and we were just barely the second chapter. And they formulated us and put us to work, and, you know, we did what we had to do for the neighborhood or whatever, you know. And, mm-hmm. and you know, then, but you get out of that, you grow out of that, you know, as you do higher crimes, you grow out of what they call, like, the street gang, you know, because when you do higher crimes and you get busted, you go to prison, and, you know, you leave all that street stuff behind because it's all racial in prison, you know? Mm-hmm.
So you started when you're 13 or 14, mm-hmm. and then you did it, you were part of this gang for years,
yeah.
And when was it that you wanted out? When was it that you felt like you were wanting out of the gang?
Oh, just what got me out of that street stuff was, you know, going to prison and being like, oh, well, you know, come to find out that was not for me. That was for the black. The black people were Bloods, and that was, you were doing the wrong thing. You had to go with Mexicans. So I went, you know, I always knew about it. I knew if I went down, I wasn't going to be able to do that, you know, and I knew that there was a group of Chicanos that represented Austin, and they formulated as an anti-gang, you know. You weren't able to boss anybody around, you weren't able to tell somebody what to do, and if they weren't a part of you, you know, you had to show that person respect, you know, because, you know, just because he was different or whatever, you couldn't just take everything that was his and call it your own, you know. We're against, you know, we call ourselves Tango Blast, you know, we like to say together against negative gang organizations or notorious gang organization. And we formulated because we were being oppressed in the prison system, you know. So, you know, to continue that kind of a legacy and not allow people to be oppressed, you know, we continue to stand strong, and now we're, you know, the biggest you know, fastest growing or whatever, but it's not all it's cracked up to be because people use that name for a lot of bad.
Okay. You know? So you were a part of the Bloods for mm-hmm. years, mm-hmm. and then you got to prison. You're trying to figure out if you want out or what's going on here, mm-hmm. or trying to find a different way of life. Mm-hmm. And then in prison, you met Tongo Blast.
Right.
Which is really an organization trying to remove you from gangs.
Yeah, right. But it's also, you know, on the coup, it's turning into a gang already. You know, okay. It's because with more people, there's more problems. And, you know, that has turned into a monster now.
Okay,
you know
so
I mean?
That was the original purpose, but right. now it's kind of become a gang in itself.
Yeah, it's, right? yeah it's in certain forms, you know, people use it for that. Cool. You know, but there are still the ones that stick to the original. We don't represent out here in the street, you know. We just be friends together, you know. Okay. We're not a gang, you know.
Okay. They're so while you were going through all this, mm-hmm. I think you've told me that, you mm-hmm. know, God's put people in your life all along the way. And while you were in prison, mm-hmm. You met a guy by the name of Curtis Walker.
Oh, yeah. Curtis Walker was a real influential person in my life. And you know, he was... God always sent somebody to what I call, like, tame the lion. When I'm in the lion's den, you know, and there was always something for me not to get hurt or something for me to gain out of it, you know. And there was always a person that he put there, like an angel or a guardian or whatever, however you want to call it. But God always placed a person there, you know. And Curtis was... You know, he just was there. He was at the right place, at the right time, at the right season in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, and it so happened to be, you know, in Bartlett, in dorm, bunk 49, you know. And his was back, way back in the corner. And he just had a good little area that was away from everything, you know. And people knew that if they wanted a prayer or something, they could go to the preacher man over there. You know, they call him the preacher man, you know. And I didn't disrespect him like that. Call him Curtis, you know. We came to be friends. And that's actually the first time I actually practiced confessing my sins with another Christian, you know, together. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, speaking, you know, your sin out loud to each other and just really getting into the Bible and really digging deep into it. And, you know, of course he's there for a crime. I'm there for a crime, you know. He was very influential because, you know, he helped me. And, of course, I got a little, you know, chided by my homies, you know. Oh, you over there, you know, you going to church over there, whatever, and this and that. And I said, hey, you know, that's me. You got to respect that, you know. That's part of being Tongo Blast. You know, they can't tell you, oh, you can't go over there because we don't like you hanging around with that guy. You know, you say, hey, that's me. You got to respect it, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I try to bring that homies into it too, you know, that are lost along the way, I see.
Yeah. You know. So you were connected to Tongo Blast, mm-hmm. and then you met this guy named Curtis Walker, mm-hmm. who really in prison kind of reconnected you to God, and you really feel like God right. put him in your life.
Exactly. Cause I've always known about God. I grew up Catholic and been through all this, you know, I knew all the Bible stories and all that stuff. And you know, God had worked in very many different ways before that in my life, you know. And this was, I don't know if this was the part that meant more or the part that things just started realizing in my head. And, you know, just, or if I was tired of living all that, or probably it's collectively everything.
Sure, sure.
You know, just tired of living my life locked up always. You know, or if I was on the streets, always rushing around, trying to make something happen all the time, you know. Mm-hmm.
So you're connected to Tongo Blast. Mm-hmm. You meet Curtis Walker. Mm-hmm. And then now you're out of prison, and then you're trying to, you know, piece your life back together. And then recently, there was an incident that happened connected to Tongo Blast at a Shell gas station. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was really old stuff from back when I was young, you know. You know, old gang stuff, and then, you know, old between some crazy, you know, girl and stuff, you know. And I end up getting jumped. You know, a lot of people know what happened to my truck out there, you know. You know, they were trying to beat me up.
So Skyler has maybe the most beautiful Ford truck. What year is it?
It's a 94 Ford, F-150.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, mm-hmm. right? And then yeah. your father gave it to you.
Yeah, it's my dad. I love the truck, you know. Her mm-hmm. name is Simone, you know. Well, she's, you know, somebody like that needs a nice name, too. Well, my dad named her that. He named all his cars. He had the General, the old dirty white girl. He had Carmella, and then Simone was his... Yeah.
And Simone was handed down to you, right?
Yeah.
And so from that incident, uh-huh. So it was a pretty negative incident. You were pretty upset.
Oh yeah, because they beat my truck up. You know, they couldn't handle what I have. They had to beat my truck up. You know, that's like God, dog, this really just really hurt me down deep. You know, because you know my dad gave me that truck, and I was real happy. You know, I learned how to drive in that truck, and you know, I didn't want, you know, disappoint him down, you know, make him think, oh, man, you know, give him a vehicle and woo, 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 this way. You know, my mama gave me a vehicle. I wrecked it. I tore it to pieces, you know. And, you know, it's a little old tomato car, you know, and I tore it up, you know. And I just, God, damn, it just really hurt me that happened. Something yeah. bad happened to Simone, you know.
So from that incident, you somehow reconnected with your grandfather.
Oh, can yeah. You well, you know, that? My grandfather, he'd been always trying to get me to go live with him. You know, I stay here in the east side. I could, you know, I could stay a few different places here, you know. And, you know, and I got a lot of rooms here in the east side. But, you know, I come to see, you know, my grandpa, he'd been trying to get me to go over there. And he always telling me I need to just, he just got me. And he says, you know, you just need to leave. He goes, I was in the same stuff that you were in, and I had to go. He left. He went to military. That was his way out, was military. And he goes, I had to do it. You had to do it. You don't forget about your people, but you just change what you do with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I, you know, just seemed very logical for me to leave, you know. And, you know, that's the hardest thing for me to do because, the easy thing would be, you know, because the funny thing about these guys, they did all this bad stuff to me and everything, and sure, they got away with it or whatever, you know, that night, you know, I know where the guys lived, I know where their mama lived, you know, mm-hmm. and they know I know where they live, you know, that's the dumb part too, you know, but, you know, that's also the hard part for me, you know, because I had to choose, you know, whether to go over there or not, you know.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I've driven by, you know, in my truck, you know. Yeah, brand, you know, all fixed up, of course.
So I remember when you were trying to make that decision, that was a hard thing for you to actually pull out of your community. And your grandfather lives in Pflugerville.
Yeah. North side.
Yeah, but then now in hindsight, you're connected with your grandfather maybe the one person on earth who understands exactly what you're going through, has been through it, and then you've been able to focus on your studies.
Yeah, that's the main best thing that's come out of here is, you know, one, I'm safe, you know, I don't have to worry about where I sleep, where I lay my head at night. And also at the same time, man, I get the ability to get out. See, this neighborhood is so distracting to me, man.
Sure.
I can't even drive five blocks down the street, boom, I ran somebody and something's going on and, whatever it might be, or, you know, call me, I'm right around the corner, see my truck outside, you know, and, you know, but I'm able to focus on school and things that are really, really important, you know, things that I put to the wayside a long time ago, you know, and
written. Yeah, so this text then, in Luke 17, where 10 were blessed with something, a new life again, and then only one comes back. What does that text mean to you this morning?
Well, you know, only one comes back. And you know, throughout this story, you know, Jesus says, you know, Jesus tells them when he goes, he says, well, you know, only one comes back, and go on and you be blessed. You know, you're blessed. You're healed. You're cleansed. And I thought about that, and I was like, you know, it's not until we come back to God and give him all the praise and all the grace that we really cleanse on the inside, because he cleansed them all on the outside. You know, he cleansed my truck all on the outside. You know, it looks real nice, you know. But, you know, it wasn't in the inside of me, the passenger on the inside, you know, that gets cleansed until give him all the praise. Because I could make a lot of grand statements about myself, you know, and all great things I've done. But the truth is, I ain't done nothing, because I struggle with it every day. Every day I think about those guys. Every day I think about the other people that have harmed me or stole from me, or I've done something to them or their people, or, you know, and that's got to live with that, you know. And, you know, if you don't give God all the praise, he's not going to cleanse you from all that. And it's constant work all the time.
Thanks, Skylar. Let's give Skylar a hand. The next up, we actually have someone who couldn't be here today, and so we went ahead and filmed her ahead of time. Her name is Karen Craven. She is married to her husband, Stephen, and so you'll hear more about her from the clip.
I am a Chinese medical student, and that's something I would never have thought that I would be doing. And I didn't even know that Chinese medicine was a reality in America until 2 years ago. And, you know, we're talking today about thankfulness, and I'm incredibly thankful to be here in Austin doing what I'm doing. You know, in the scripture we're talking about today, Luke 17, there were 10 people who were healed, but only one of them came back to express gratitude. And I want to be really mindful to thank God for the freedom I have to study, the freedom I have to choose a path of service. It's an amazing thing. And not that the life I led before this was anything but good, too. Chinese medicine will be my third career. I was a caterer before this. I had a successful catering company, and it was a life of service. I got to meet people at a point of need. I got to care for them, encourage them, and those are things I love to do. I love to care and encourage. And so it was joyful. I got to use all of my creative energy, and it was a beautiful thing. And I love to feed people, but I'm really more passionate about feeding hungry people. And the people I fed were pretty well fed already. So even though it was a wonderful thing to do, it wasn't, I guess, vital enough. My first career was probably it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. I was a full-time mom for over 20 years, and it had its challenges, and there were times when I felt like perhaps I wasn't doing anything of value. But now that my kids are grown, and they've all come to me on different occasions and repeatedly to say what it meant to them for me to be there every day when they came home from school, and, you know, as they regurgitated all of the things that had happened to them during the day, that had value. And, you know, I was able to be, you know, the sounding board. I was able to shape character, which is what parenting's all about. All of that, protecting them and feeding them, you know, that's just logistics. I had the time to shape character, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. And, you know, when I was at a dinner party and somebody asked me what I did, and I said I'm a full-time homemaker mother, and, you know, their eyes would just kind of glaze over and they would be looking for somebody else to talk to. I got it. I didn't like it. I knew what I was doing was eternally significant, even if the person I was talking to didn't get it at all. And, you know, it was difficult financially. The first 10 years of parenting, you know, things were very tight and we budgeted to the nickel. And, you know, we would wonder, are we cheating our kids out of something because we're not able to buy X, Y, and Z? And, you know, I look back and no, we weren't cheating them out of anything. We were giving them the best, and that was our time, attention, emotional energy. we made the right decision, and I'm so thankful that we did, and that God gave us the strength to walk a path that was different. You know, we didn't have the things that everybody has because we chose to live a different sort of life, and our kids are grateful, and so are we. And so that is the best thing I've ever done. But now I'm here. I'm in Austin. And, you know, we got here along a really difficult path, and not something that's easy to talk about. Steve received a very, a hard-to-accept medical diagnosis, and we thought that his life could end on any day. And so we reevaluated everything in our lives. We let go of everything trivial. We got rid of our possessions. We gave things away by the truckload, literal truckloads. We jettisoned everything. We stopped castle building, and which is what our term for making a nice home, buying a better this, a bigger that, all of that just went away. And the only things that mattered to us were people. And we realized, you know, people are eternal. They're the only thing that lasts. And so they became our total focus. We spent time with the people that we loved. We tried to find ways to serve people. We were more active in the community. It was not a dramatic change because we had always been concerned and lovers of people, but now we just didn't have any distractions. We didn't have to go to Home Depot every single weekend and get whatever we needed for the house that was broken or needed improving. And so that was a really great thing. We eventually sold our home. We moved into a tiny little apartment that we nicknamed the postage stamp and just started praying. And we prayed, I guess, for a solid year. You know, God, where do you want us? How do you want to use us? What do you want our lives to look like? We're yours. What we have is yours. Our resources are freed up. Show us. Show us where you want us to go and what you want us to do. But we didn't just pray, which is, yeah, the biggest part of anything with God, but he also gives us other people. So we talked to friends. We talked to missionaries that we knew. We read books. We talked to our pastors. We were looking for what God wanted us to do, and we figured he had a person who would tell us, or, you know, we were okay with direct revelation, but usually God doesn't do that. So, but we were open to it. And we thought that we would be in full-time Christian ministry. We thought we would be feeding the hungry in some foreign country, you know, sleeping on dirt, and we were cool with that. But instead, I'm studying Chinese medicine and shocked to be here, but know that it is absolutely the right thing. And God did a lot. He was very generous with direction. I can't tell you the story because I'll cry, and I don't want to cry, but it's a really affirming, beautiful thing that he did to show us that this is the path he wanted us to follow. So Steve and I do have an exhausting lifestyle. We're apart almost 50% of the time, which we've been married since we were 21, so this is not easy for us to be apart. And so we do suffer somewhat in this path, but overall we are blessed and grateful to be doing what we're doing. We feel like there isn't any other choice. This is where we've been directed. This is what we want to do. We have no idea where this is taking us. We are making plans because, as responsible people, you do plan, you pray, you look for where the next step is. We don't know. And it's kind of exciting not to know. So we're thankful to be where we are, and we're looking forward to where the next path is.
All right, so that was Karen Craven. She's not here today, but if you see her, tell her thank you. And if you can convince her to cook for you or make some sort of dessert, you would enjoy that. All right, and then lastly, we have my dear friends, Melissa and Fred. So if you want to give them a hand, they're going to come on up.
I abandoned him. Yeah.
All right. So as Fred is coming on up, I'll let Melissa start. If you want to just tell a bit about the both of you and then just how long you've been in Austin. You're pretty new. And then I'll give you maybe a couple minutes to brag about Fred because you did that when I first met you. So.
Well, we've been in Austin since September 30th, I believe. We came down here because Fred has continuing physical issues, and we thought it would be a good time to move near children. And we have a daughter down here. I have a daughter down here, and Fred has a niece. And they're young and healthy and able to come over and help us out when need be. And it's just very comforting to be near children. We had been to Austin several times to visit, and we knew that we would probably like it. We come from Baltimore, so we're not going to have to deal with ice and snow, or at least snow, too much of the time. And that's going to be good for Fred.
Go ahead and brag about Fred.
We are both in not our first marriage, I would say. And when I met Fred, I was very impressed with, and still am, with the fact that he is interested in absolutely everything. You know, if you have a little baby boy, or just a baby, any kind of a baby, and they're just interested in everything that they see, and they're excited about it, and they want to show it to, he hasn't lost that. And it's just wonderful. It's very exciting. He's a Roman Catholic.
It also drives you crazy.
It also drives me crazy, right. He's a Roman Catholic priest with knowledge of language that gives you with the Latin background, and he loves languages. He loves to learn new languages. He loves words and likes to think about what they mean, really mean, mm-hmm. deep down. And realizes how important language is in communication with one another. But I think the greatest thing about Fred is that he has a wonderful, wonderful ability, and I'm going to cry, to make every person that he is in contact feel important and to feel that they know that he wants to listen to them and to really hear what they're saying. And that is a huge gift. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And you're you're also an astronomer?
An astronomer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, okay, now it's your turn. You get to brag about Melissa.
Okay. Well, we were prepped by Gideon on this sharing with you, gentle people. And, you know, after 76 and a half years, 5/12, there's an awful lot to be grateful for. And I am certainly grateful for this chance to share a little bit of my life and our lives with you. And thinking about what Gideon said at the very beginning, you know, he had his issues with Thanksgiving. And I remember growing up as Catholic and also in the mainstream Protestant tradition. That's a mix of stories. And I thought, why do we have to have a special day for Thanksgiving? Because I was always taught that we're a Eucharistic people, which means we're a people of Thanksgiving. And that every day, Eucharist means thanks, right? Every day is a day, if we really have any kind of spiritual life, to be in wonder and awe and to be grateful for what we have. And did you want to ask me a question?
You're supposed to brag about Melissa.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am going to brag. I love Melissa. For so many reasons. I'll probably puddle up, but she started. let it go. That cane needs me. When I let it go, it falls. Melissa is a life embracer. She just embraces life. And she embraces me, and that's kind of nice. And she does it with such a steadiness. She began to embrace music when she was just, how old were you when you picked up the violin?
8.
Well, she's a professional violinist, and she's played everywhere in Washington and Baltimore and around this country. And
she played at the Long Center last Sunday.
Played at the Long Center last Sunday. She's only been in Austin for a couple of months, and she's already a member of the Austin Civic Orchestra. And she embraces art.
Could you tell us briefly about the program she started in Baltimore?
I will. Yeah. That's my next thought, okay. In fact. Thank you. I appreciate the prompting, though. I do. There's so much. We had the grace, and it is something we're thankful for. We were working with the poor in Baltimore for about 8 years, and we finally decided to move into the hood with them. It was a largely black community, really largely, a small black and sort of white us church. And Melissa had a dream for a long time as an artist, as a musician artist, but also graphic art of sorts. That's not a very good word. That she wanted to start a community art center. From the day I met her, she started talking about this. Well, being who she is, she followed through. And she started Jubilee Art in the hood of Baltimore, right at the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue and Pressman Street, where we have our fair share of troubles.
So if you've seen The Wire right there.
That's right. The Wire, much of it was filmed in our neighborhood. In any event, she did it. She did it. Within a year, she had this thriving Jubilee arts community going in Baltimore. And one of the last things she did before we moved to Austin was hand it over, intact. A thriving, wonderful, I don't have words for it. Anyway, she embraces life, whether it's music, whether it's art. She knows how to be a friend. She has retained her friends from Washington, made new friends in Baltimore, and she's retaining them beautifully. She's from Minnesota originally, and friends are there. And she knows, how do I say this? She knows about being a mother. Was it Karen that spoke last?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you, she doesn't always think so, but she's one hell of a mother. And now living in Austin, she's grandmothering 2 of her 4 grandchildren, and that's a beautiful thing to see. And I get to be granddad. I've got a bunch of, this is not my first marriage, not Melissa's first marriage. Can I say a word about gratitude?
Sure.
I think of all the things that, I could talk on about her, you must suspect, but sometimes we're not always aware of what we need to be grateful for. Sometimes it's slow dawning on us. And I'm going to share something very deep, and I'm not bragging here, it's just the way my life has been. I was born into a very good family. I just had a sister die yesterday, by the way. Very, very good family. And I was skilled in school, went to the parochial school and was president of my class and top honors. And I always wanted to be a priest from the time I was this young. And I couldn't decide that whether to go to seminary or marry Betty Musser. And the seminary won out. And there, too, I excelled in my studies, in sports, had a certain amount of social skills. And I knew this was all gift. I mean, I don't think I was toppling over from pride. I knew it was all gift. But, I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue what people, normal people, go through growing up or attaining maturity or being mature. I just didn't know what it was to suffer at all. So I was ordained, and lo and behold, the bishop appointed me to a man, a pastor, who was certifiably insane. Very, very difficult. And I couldn't handle the man. I just didn't know what to do. And for the psychiatrist among you, I had an anxiety reaction. And within 6 months of ordination, I had an anxiety reaction, and I was in the hospital. And then in the old priest retirement home at 26, ordained just 6 months, I felt a complete failure. point is, it took me a while, about a year. But I began to learn you'll be all right. I began to learn compassion. And there's many a spiritual writer who tells us that we can sum up all of Jesus of Nazareth and the spiritual life and the Christian life and the Jewish life and any valid spiritual life by the word compassion, mercy. And so in retrospect, I was very, very grateful. Hello. I was very, very grateful for that learning experience, because it has enriched my life beyond measure.
And it wasn't something that you learned until
you got some. I wish there were another way of growing up and become fully human without suffering of some sort. I wish there were, but it seems to me that that's the way we make it if we accept it and embrace it, not to whitewash it, not to call it something good. That's a mystery. But somehow, I had the chance, certainly, of growing up. Not just that experience. I had a failed marriage, which taught me a little bit about compassion.
And so maybe let's keep going on that thread. So in terms of just the connection between suffering and gratitude, I think you both have shared what you're thankful for this morning is your marriage. But it's a long story to get there. You want to share that with us?
Well, my story about learning about life, I guess, is I grew up in a family where I was pretty much taught that I didn't count and they didn't want to hear me, and I felt pretty dismissed. And my first marriage kind of confirmed that. My husband followed along with that program, and by the time I was 45 and divorced and as kind of estranged from my parents and feeling completely alone in the world, my children were almost grown, I was in a pretty bad place. I was very, very depressed. It felt like there was just darkness all around me. And it got so dark and I fell so far that suddenly I found myself at the bottom. And it was there that I met God. And I'm eternally grateful for that reaching the bottom. I think that is maybe grace that not everybody does who is in a bad place. Some people just keep going. And it was down there that I realized that there were people around me who were holding their hands out to me to help. And in them, I saw the face of God. And I realized, in addition, that God was in here as well. And I think I am very grateful for that.
And you shared that you're thankful because you would never choose to go to that place.
Absolutely.
But without getting there, you would have not encountered God.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly.
And then I think, Fred, when you met Melissa not too briefly before that you were in a similar place as well.
I was in a tough place, yeah. I just come out of a... Well, let me be honest. This is my third marriage. My first marriage, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Then my second marriage, after 11 years, my wife, and we were a good team, announced after a long therapy that she was lesbian. What do you do with that? You know. So after a couple counseling, we gave it up. But I was another year trying to get back on my psychic feet and my spiritual feet. And I met Melissa. We were set up, thank God. Asked to chop vegetables for a Chinese wok dinner. And I saw that here was a person where I could really, really rediscover myself and rediscover God and get on that spiritual journey that Karen talked about so well.
I think we both recognize that there was in each of us someone on the path to God, not always sure that how to do it, but we wanted to be on that path to God together, and we knew how important it was to join hands together to do that.
So maybe this morning, in light of the text, mm-hmm. and maybe we have friends here who maybe are going to that place or in that place where it's just really dark and lonely, would you have any words for them
that text.
About that?
Mm-hmm. Whenever I read stories in the Bible, especially the parables, I think of them as dreams that I've had, and I look at them as I was taught to look at my dreams, so that each part of the parable is a part of me. And so I think of that parable as the 9 times out of 10 story about being. 9 times out of 10, I take everything for granted. 9 times out of 10, I think I've accomplished it. 9 times out of 10, I think I deserve whatever I have. But there is that tenth time when, by grace, by some circumstance, I am shown once again that nothing that I have is due to me. Nothing that I've done is what I've done. It's all gift from God. And I just pray that somehow I can hang on to that tenth part of me and maybe make it grow so that it becomes more of the 9 parts, but don't know.
And very quickly, we've been a member, I guess we're officially a member of Vox for a little over a month. And you've already given me and given us so much. I want to give back a little something. With all these stories of, just go to the marriage. Even though the Pope doesn't like it, I still keep practicing my ministry and my priesthood in a very quiet way, usually. And marriage and its success and its beauty has come to mean a great deal to me. And I've been celebrating marriages for a long time now, ever since the beginning. And I do a fair amount of marriage prep, counseling, and after. And I just tell you, I'm available. If anybody just wants to talk, I'll listen.
Okay, thank you. And before, I'm going to ask either Fred or Melissa to close us in prayer. But before we do, I think there's three... With these three stories, there's one thing in common. And with Skylar, with Karen, with Fred and Melissa, I think if they were looking for a church community to serve them, I don't know if Vox would necessarily be that place. And I feel like they've kind of, created this path for us where they've chosen a community where I think that they really can serve and contribute to us. And so... since we're communicating thanks, I want to say thanks to Skylar, to Melissa, and to Fred. And you all mean a lot to us as a community. And I think we're so much richer in terms of diversity, experience, depth. And so I just want to say thank you.
Thanks to you.
Would either of you like to close?
Fred and I have a custom in the morning of praying together, so we will pray together out, pray us out together. Dear God, thank you so much for this community. Thank you for waking us all up this morning and bringing us together. Thank you for the gift of life, for the gift of you, for the gift of each other. Help us to be worthy.
Well, I could just say ditto. Usually I don't when we pray in the morning together, but I can say ditto to what Melissa said. And I the older I get, the more I'm impressed by the wonder of it all, the awe of being alive. And they say, whoever they are, that the first human experience as we grow up 2-3 years old age is wonder and awe. A child is full of wonder. A child is full of awe. And when we're most in touch with God, we are too. And the second spiritual experience is thanksgiving for the wonder and generosity of it all. And I am feeling that now, and I'm repeating myself. Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Let's give him a hand.